This is 9/11 Freefall.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 9/11 Freefall. My name is Andy Steele, and I am the host. Tonight, we'll be joined by AE 9/11 Truth board members Roland Engel and Casey Pfeiffer. They'll be talking about the next step in Project Due Diligence, and also Casey just gave a presentation down in Georgia. He'll be sharing some details from his experience down there. And we're also going to read an article by Craig McKee on this very subject. So that's all coming your way in just a moment. Stay tuned.
He's in the lobby and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, it was if they had detonated.
They
were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
We have explosive demolition at not only the Twin Towers, but also Building 7.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
You want to call your mother or something?
It's just a matter of time. That's all it is. It's a matter of time and the persistence of those who continue to adhere to it and push for it. And that's what we're doing.
Tune in to 9/11 Freefall, a show about 9/11 truth, 9/11 science, and the activists and scholars who are blowing the lid off the crime of the century. You can download episodes at 911freefall.com.
The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. So Craig McKee published a new article at ae911truth.org related to our outreach at the ASCE convention in Miami recently. The title of the article is ASCE Threats Reveal Growing Fear of Project Due Diligence Message. And it begins, "The American Society of Civil Engineers is afraid." And that's a good thing, according to Roland Engel, head of AE 9/11 Truth's Project Due Diligence. The leadership of the ASCE has begun threatening to expel PDD representatives from national conferences for sharing information critical of the official account of the World Trade Center's destruction on 9/11. Organizers were especially aggressive at the most recent conference, the ASCE 2019 convention held October 10th to the 13th in Miami, Florida. "They did everything they could to discourage us, including threatening to have us thrown out of there," says Engel. "But I see this as a good sign. The ASCE is only scared of things that represent a real threat to them." The ASCE has good reason to fear scrutiny given the role they played in promulgating the official story, Engel adds. "Not only did they give their tacit stamp of approval to the destruction of the forensic evidence at Ground Zero, but they also contributed to FEMA's fatally flawed 2002 World Trade Center Building Performance Study, and to their publication of deceptive peer-reviewed papers on the tower's destruction by Zdenek Bezant. So they're going to oppose us every step of the way. We expect that." That's a quote from Roland. At the first conference that PDD volunteers attended, the Forensic Engineering Congress in Austin, Texas, in November of 2018, the ASCE's approach was to ignore them. But, as Engel recalls, that hands-off approach didn't last. At the next conference attended by PDD volunteers, the Structures Congress in Orlando, Florida, in April of 2019, organized by ASCE Structural Engineering Institute, the ASCE started paying more attention and even used a clause in its contract with a hotel hosting the conference to block PDD from using a room in the same hotel for its presentation on the World Trade Center controlled demolition evidence. By the third conference, in Miami last month, security staff threatened to eject Project Due Diligence volunteers from the conference if they didn't stop distributing brochures to participants, even though all four had paid the $1,000 fee to attend, and even though the ASCE encourages networking among its members. It had already denied PDD permission to make a presentation at the conference. The volunteers had two main objectives: to engage with attendees by sharing the PDD brochure and World Trade Center message with as many fellow engineers as possible, and to get as many attendees as possible to come to the PDD presentation on the destruction of the three World Trade Center high-rises during the final evening of the conference. Though the foursome was pleased to have distributed brochures to more than half of the 600 conference-goers, only a handful came to the presentation, which was held at a nearby hotel. In April, the proportion was similar. But despite the numbers being low, the response from PDD presentation attendees has been uniformly positive at all three conferences. In fact, no one at any PDD event has ever significantly objected to any of the information presented. It's a matter of trying to bring this to people's attention, explains volunteer Dick Lohman, who was attending his first conference for PDD in Miami. When people go to the presentation, they say, wow, something is wrong here. We need a new investigation. This sentiment was echoed by Engel, who notes that in the 16 presentations PDD has given to more than 200 engineers, either at these conferences or to ASCE chapters throughout the U.S., and this is a quote, we haven't found one single engineer who will stand behind the NIST report. Engel says he finds it astonishing that about 30% of the engineers who have attended the PDD presentations hadn't previously heard about Building 7. This means that the leadership of this organization has not promoted awareness of Building 7, the third worst structural failure in modern history, nor its repercussions or its impact for our profession, he says. The ASCE is supposed to be promoting the efficiency, reliability, and integrity of the organization, of the profession, and they're not doing so. And then the section is titled Interesting Encounters. Lohman, a resident of Idaho, reports a particularly interesting encounter he had with an engineer whose wife is employed by the ASCE and who said he was working for a, quote, security agency on the 10th floor of Building 7 around the time of 9/11, although he was not in the office that day. The only tenant of the floor that matches his description is the U.S. Secret Service. This engineer theorized that the building collapsed due to damage from vibrations. In my opinion, that doesn't have any validity at all, Lohman says, adding that the man made an excuse and left when he was asked to explain why he reached this conclusion. In addition to Lohman, the Miami PDD team consisted of Larry Cooper, who lives part of the year in Michigan and part in Florida, and who was attending his third ASCE conference over the past year. Charles Coleman from rural Washington State, who attended the last two, and Vincent Petrini-Poli from Illinois, who participated for the first time in Miami. Coleman doesn't sugarcoat what PDD was up against at the most recent conference. AE 9/11 Truth is not welcome at the ASCE convention, he reports. We're legally allowed to be there, but we have to skulk around in the shadows surreptitiously to get people interested. It reminds me of a counterfeit watch salesman with 100 watches in his coat attending a policeman's convention. Coleman says that all those who attended the PDD presentation were impressed, but the challenge is to get engineers to the event in the first place. ASCE officials have become more aggressive in making sure we don't get our word out. We're going to have to redouble our efforts to expose our presentation to more and more engineers. At one point, Coleman spoke with a structural engineering professor from Columbia University who said he thinks the reason for the destruction of the towers has been well established and he is glad the world has moved beyond the question. He had absolutely no interest in the causal factors in the collapses of the three towers of the World Trade Center, Coleman says. Cooper recounts a conversation he had with an engineer who happened to have his own tie to Building 7, having assisted in producing the 2010 Weidlinger Associates report on behalf of the defendants in a lawsuit brought by Aegis Insurance and Con Edison against World Trade Center 7 Properties and Cantor Engineering. The suit alleged negligence in both the design and construction of Building 7. The U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the plaintiffs. He was critical of our work, but in his criticism, he made statements that are not true, Cooper says, adding that he does not think the Weidlinger report was professionally done. One thing that everyone from PDD understands is that raising awareness of the World Trade Center evidence among engineers won't happen quickly, and that success will only come from sticking with it for the long haul. There aren't going to be any home runs here, Angle says. This isn't going to be an easy process. But I think they understand now that the effort we're mounting is consistent, it's persistent, and it's not going away. All right, Roland Angle and Casey Pfeiffer are coming your way. Today I'm joined by two board members for AE 911 Truth. The first one, Roland Angle. He graduated from the University of California, Berkeley with a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering. He served in the U.S. Army Special Forces where he was trained in the use of explosives. And he became a licensed civil engineer in California. His 50 years of engineering experience has included designing and testing of blast-hardened missile launch facilities and designing U.S. Naval explosive containers, harbor terminal facilities, earth foundation systems, and hydraulic systems. In addition, Roland has owned three construction companies and has taught engineering subjects to high school students. He's currently on the board of AE 911 Truth, as I mentioned, and he is the leader of Project Due Diligence. This audience knows him well. Roland, welcome back to 911 Freefall.
Thank you, Andy. Glad to be back.
And he's joined by Marshall Casey Pfeiffer. Casey has a Bachelor of Civil Engineering from the University of Notre Dame. He has been working as a structural engineer in the greater San Diego, California area for the past 21 years. He spent 4 years working for KPFF Consulting Engineers in Los Angeles, 7 years with Hope Engineering, which is now Kauffman Engineers in San Diego, and 10 years as an owner of Pacific Coast Structural Engineering, LLC, also in San Diego. He's on the board of AE 911 Truth, doing a lot of good work. He'll be talking about a presentation he just gave in Georgia today. Casey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Andy. I'm glad to be back.
So here we are again. Project Due Diligence is making a lot of great strides, so we keep on talking about it here on the show because that is the essence of what we do here at AE 911 Truth. We take the information, the evidence of controlled demolition at the World Trade Center on September 11th to the engineering community. We do a lot of public outreach to the general non-engineering public too, but it's important to get at those professionals because then they add their name to the petition. That list of names grows. We take it to Congress. We take it so many places to show, hey, all of these experts are saying there's problems with the official story. That's why this subject, this initiative that Roland is heading up is so important. Always being wary that we may pick up new listeners, new people may have woken up to the controlled demolition evidence last week and are just catching up with the decades worth, over a decade's worth of great work that AE has been doing. Roland, can you give our audience a brief overview telling them again what Project Due Diligence is all about?
We know that the reports that were done that purported to explain why the three high-rise buildings at the World Trade Center collapsed on 9/11/2001 have not been widely distributed or understood amongst our colleagues in the engineering profession. So we have analyzed those reports and done a lot of research into the documents that went into making up that report, and we have discovered that there are many errors and omissions in those reports that our colleagues are not aware of, and we wouldn't have been aware of them either if we hadn't gone through the drawings and specifications and the report that NIST prepared and that FEMA prepared with a great deal of diligence, put in thousands of hours, pouring through the more than 11,000 pages of reports and coming up with some serious questions that we feel would require a new report to explain. So we have taken that information, we've compiled it, we recorded our explanation of it. There's a video of it on the website under Project Due Diligence. And at the summary of all the information that we have uncovered that leads us to believe as professionals that our profession has not been well represented by these reports. And we feel that there are serious errors of such magnitude that would require a new investigation. However, we also understand that by far the majority of engineers in our field have not had the time to go through those reports in that manner, in a organized and disciplined fashion in the way we have. And so we are now releasing our report to our profession and taking it to the local chapters so that the engineers at that level can have a chance to look into this information and decide whether or not we need to call for a new investigation as a profession. Right now, our profession stands behind the NIST reports and the leadership of the American Society of Civil Engineers and the National Society of Professional Engineers and the National Association of Forensic Engineers. The leadership bodies have all come out in support of the NIST reports. We feel that even at that level, those board members that are voting for those positions don't understand the information that we are presenting. And we feel that they need to hear it before they continue to support the official versions. So that's our job with Project Due Diligence. That's why we call it Project Due Diligence. We're doing our due diligence to take this information out to our professional colleagues and mobilize them to call for a new investigation, which we feel with 100% certainty is required. And by the way, the presentations that we've made so far, we have gained almost 100% support amongst those rank and file engineers for our position. And that only confirms our belief that what we're doing is the proper course.
You know, there's so much politics, so much groupthink, so much peer pressure that goes into institutional thinking. And a lot of times people will say they stand by the NIST report. You ask them some questions about it. They don't even know the official story that they are defending. This can happen even with professionals. It's not an attack on their intelligence or their knowledge. It's essentially believing what the higher-ups have already told them without looking into it themselves. That is why this is so important, to present the information that AE-911 Truth has uncovered, to present the problems with the official story that NIST has given us, the problems in their reports, the flaws, the errors, to do our job and lay out for them why this is a real issue. So at the very least, we can say we have given this to these engineers, we've given this to these professional institutions. What they decide to do with it, whether they decide to look at it, is up to them, but we continue that outreach going. What kind of venues have our volunteers presented this information at? You mentioned some organizations and local chapters. Where has Project Due Diligence gone in the past year?
We started out in the spring of last year, 2018, and we have focused primarily on the American Society of Civil Engineers, which has 160 local branches all over the U.S. and Canada and Puerto Rico. And we are focusing on the U.S. branches. We are contacting them and asking them if we can make a presentation to them regarding the World Trade Center building failures. And in those cases, we are finding that about 15% of the branches that we have contacted have agreed to have us. We've now presented to some of their branches in Michigan and in California, in Texas, in Virginia. I haven't got my data in front of me right here, but we presented to more than a dozen of those branches, and the reaction that we've gotten has been uniformly positive, supporting our position calling for a new investigation. We've also made presentations in front of some National Society of Professional Engineers organizations. We presented in front of one of their chapters in Milwaukee, and we presented to their statewide organization in Wisconsin. We recently made a presentation, Casey made a presentation just a couple of weeks ago in Georgia, in Atlanta, to their statewide professional development hours conference, where the attendees were given professional development hours for attending the session. And we are also reaching out to the Structural Engineers Association, which are statewide independent organizations. We're presently negotiating with their organization in Arizona, in Colorado, and we're beginning in Oregon. So we're trying to hit particularly the structural engineering aspect of the American Society of Civil Engineers and also the Structural Engineers Associations, which are independent of ASCE. And NSPE is a separate organization, which is not so much technically oriented, but more involved in the other professional aspects of engineering practice.
Well, it sounds like it's reaching a lot of corners of the engineering world, which is exactly what it's designed to do. You mentioned that Casey just did a presentation in Georgia, and I want to put a spotlight on this right now, because every time that we have a big presentation from PDD, I typically bring on the person who was the center of it onto the show to talk about it. So, Casey, from your perspective being there, can you please tell our audience more details about what you presented to the people there?
Okay. Well, with Roland and Tony, a standardized presentation has been developed for the purposes of presenting the problems with the Building 7 and the Building 1 and 2 NIST reports, the contradictions inherent in the reports for both of those incidences. I mean, the 1 and 2 being a style of building that collapsed, and then the Building 7, which is another style of building that collapsed. The day was a professional development hours conference for engineers that want to learn about all different styles and types of engineering, because it's a society of professional engineers. It was conducted at Georgia Tech, and it was a number of the presentations were done, most of them were done by local engineers or professors at Georgia Tech University. The presentation, I went to a few of the presentations. They were wide-ranging, and I learned a lot, and I enjoyed it. And the presentation that I gave, mostly I wasn't able to get further than Building 7, and that may have been because of a lot of different things. Some of it may have been my own prejudice and interest in Building 7 at the moment, because it is such a We just have that report from Dr. Halsey, and a lot of people were interested in it. As a whole, we were told there was about 30 to 35 engineers that were attending the conference. There's two different tracks of conferencing, and we had about 20, which is by far the most attended a talk, and each of the talks are an hour long. There's about 12 talks on the day, and it was by far the most attended talk of the day. As the presentation, generally speaking, starts off with Building 7, and from that talk, I got about 40 minutes into it, and the audience started to get antsy and wanted to ask questions. So we spent the last 20 minutes answering questions, and I didn't get into Building 1 and 2 because the Building 7 questions started coming up. The striking part was that the majority of people in the room of the 20 Well, I say majority. There's about, I think a third of the folks had ever heard of Building 7. And so two-thirds had never even heard of that there was a Building 7 at all. And these are all either professional engineers, either actively working or retired, or professors or students. So these are all people in the engineering world. And having two-thirds not even hear Building 7 is pretty striking. The questions had to do with, one, they couldn't understand why a number of elements were left out of the NIST report as it relates to the failure of the connection of the girder at the infamous Column 79. So the main, one of the main focuses of the NIST report is Column 79 and the girder connection to that column. And once we started to highlight the missing elements from that report, other engineers, they spoke up and started to reiterate the problems that I was talking about to help summarize it for other people. It's kind of a natural thing that engineers do, generally speaking. Whenever they feel like people aren't hearing it, they'll volunteer to try to re-explain it, which was good. It means that a number of folks were comprehending it, and then there was a number of folks that were just completely lost because they had not heard of it at all. And of course, one of the main difficulties with giving these kind of presentations is everybody wants to move past the initial grammar of learning the who, what, where, when, and they want to know why, and they want to know how. And so we did a pretty good job of trying to explain how, of course, because we have the analysis not only done by Tony Zambodi, but also completed by Dr. Holsey. And between those levels, Tony Zambodi completed a pretty good analysis. And of course, Holsey did it further on the connection of the girder to the column. And then whenever we look at the full collapse of the building as it relates to the model, what happened in reality, and NIST model in comparison to the model that Leroy Holsey completed, that really started to shock the pants off of a few engineers. Some of the engineers were very enthusiastic afterwards. It was almost a level of euphoria and interest. I couldn't tell if they had actually heard about this before and they were just happy to see somebody talking about it. But from what I could tell, it wasn't that. There's only one guy that I knew. I didn't know him personally, but I knew that had been a supporter of AE 9/11 Truth and was already in full belief that there was a problem with the NIST report and everything that went along with the building collapse.
Well, I know that our reach extends out even people that you think would not be exposed to this for whatever reason will have heard of this issue, will have heard of AE 9/11 Truth, and it's amazing some of the supporters that pop up and weird places, at least for me, and I'm not even hanging out with a bunch of engineers like you guys are. It'll just come out, and people have seen our movies, and you'll get that. You'll get a lot of supporters that'll show up at these places, and a lot of times they can be very helpful, too, in presenting information or showing things from another angle, from their own perspective, because they've been thinking about it on their own in their own research when they're looking at our videos and everything that we bring forward. So it sounds like a successful presentation, and it sounds like we have a lot of success overall. Roland, has there been any resistance that you can talk about here on the show and trying to get this information before various engineers and various chapters?
There's been serious resistance from the leadership of the certain elements, I would say, within the leadership of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and as well with the NSPE and the NAFE. I think that this resistance is actually confined to a very small group of people, but they happen to be in positions, key positions of power and authority.
And when they find out that we are making an attempt to reach out to their local groups, if they are informed of it, they have a standard letter that they send out, ASCE does, and the letter says that the investigation was initially carried out by expert structural engineers and civil engineers, which ASCE helped provide to FEMA, and that investigation was thorough and conducted in a scientific manner, and they are satisfied with the results, and they do not feel that any further investigation or discussion is warranted. And they warn about inviting people in to speak that are not qualified or not properly experienced in discussing this matter. So they do everything they can to prevent or discourage the local chapters from inviting us to make our presentation. And in some cases, they've actually reversed branches that have already accepted us. So, yeah, there's resistance. And I would say that resistance comes from the national level. And there's a group of individuals at the national level who are fully informed about the problems with the report. They choose not to address those questions. Instead, they say no further discussion is necessary, and they do everything they can to discourage and prevent the information that we have from being presented to their members. Now, fortunately, they don't exercise complete control of the local branches of their organization. So many of the branch officers either don't ask the national or the state levels if it's okay to make this presentation. They either don't ask or they don't care, and they go ahead and invite us anyway. I think it has a lot to do with the perspective of the local branches in terms of how they see their role in the organization developing over time. In other words, if they're ambitious and they're trying to climb up into higher offices within the ASCE organization, I would imagine they're much more susceptible to listening to what the national leadership has to say. On the other hand, a lot of them are local branches in rural areas. They're not large branches. They're doing everything that they can to increase their membership and the activity of their membership. And they see our presentation as something of great interest that would have a significant impact upon our profession. So they have no qualms about inviting us in.
Well, thank God for the people that don't care. I think ambition is the tool with which control is maintained in many institutions, and I'm not saying it's wrong to be ambitious or to seek more for yourself, but when it comes at the expense of overlooking truth or just participating in mass censorship of something this important, obviously, that is not a good thing. The key to life is to not care and just care about what is truthful, what is right, and let the chips fall where they may on the other stuff. And I've learned that many times in life, and I'm hoping other people have too, or will continue to learn that so that we have more justice, because it's because of those people that this information and this issue is getting out. Now, you were just at the ASCE convention in Miami. We sent out a bulletin about it. Can you talk about that outreach?
Well, I wasn't there. I was the coordinator and helped organize it, but we sent four of our volunteers from different parts of the country. We had Dick Lohman, who's an engineer up in Idaho. He went. So did Vincent Petroni Foley, who's an engineer out of Illinois, and Larry Cooper, an engineer out of Michigan, and Charles Coleman, an engineer out of Washington State. So they went down there. They attempted to get a room in the hotel where the convention was being held, and the ASCE blocked that. They have the right to refuse other groups to hold presentations in the hotel where they are. That's a pretty standard contract
clause in most commercial establishments. And so we rented a room at a nearby hotel and gave a presentation on the Saturday night during the convention in October. I think it was October 12th. And beforehand, we, of course, had registered for the convention, attended the workshops, and we had a flyer that we passed out to the attendees when the ASCE staff found out that we were there, and they seemed to be expected us because we have appeared at several of their other conventions. They threatened to throw us out, have the security throw us out. So we had to proceed under that kind of duress, which we managed to do. And then we held a presentation, and we had also advertised it to local engineering faculties at a couple of universities down there, Florida Institute and Florida International Institute University, and the other one was Miami University. So anyhow, we got a typically very small turnout from the convention itself. About six engineers showed up out of 600 that attended. And that's after we had passed out about 300 brochures to those 600 attendees over the previous 2 days. And the engineers that came were duly impressed with our presentation. There was one branch officer there from a branch in California who was very puzzled as to why the ASCE leadership was so vehemently opposing our efforts to get this information out to their members. So we had they had a good discussion about why that might be happening, for reasons which I've gone into. So we are going to continue. We've got another Structural Engineers Association, an ASCE, SEI. They have a Structural Engineering Institute, which is a part of ASCE, their structural engineering branch. We have already submitted a proposal for making a presentation at their St. Louis convention, which is going to be next April. They have already said no, they don't want to hear that. And so we will go and do the same thing at that convention as we've done in the past. We'll get a hotel room nearby. We'll make our presentation. We'll make every attempt to make their members aware of it.
Now, Casey, you sit here and listen to Roland talk about the resistance he's met. I'm sure as a board member you're already fully aware of it and some of the rabble-rousing that has to go on in order to just get information to people, stuff that should not be controversial. I mean, you're talking about one of the biggest mass murders in U.S. history, yes, but it should come down to just questions of the dynamics of how these buildings came down. It shouldn't be controversial. Of course, we know that it is. What's your reaction to all of that? I mean, have you encountered this kind of resistance? But even if you haven't, what are you thinking as you're hearing Roland talk about this?
Well, the same type of issues were discussed with a couple of folks in Atlanta, Georgia, and that has to do with the cognitive dissonance. Basically, it's too much of an emotional event. One of the things I tried to impress upon various engineers that were suffering from what I would consider the cognitive dissonance was to talk to them about the earthquakes that happened in 93, 94, and 95, and how those earthquakes in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Japan, Kyoto, Japan, they had a massive impact on the building code. And there was massive changes to how the building code analyzes and prepares for earthquakes. Yet there was zero modification to fireproofing and steel construction whenever it relates to the collapse on 9/11. Whenever you have such a catastrophic collapse, the building industry, the code industry, changes very I mean, not very quickly, but they start reacting, especially whenever it comes to that kind of a failure. Just like the bridge design industry changed whenever the Tacoma Narrows Bridge failed. And other failures that could not be easily explained and basically were a strong problem from how things were getting designed. So that resistance basically comes down to cognitive dissonance. Obviously, I've experienced it a lot early on whenever I was having these discussions. And one of the problems that we run into is it discourages you from continuing to have these conversations. And unfortunately, you end up putting certain, whether it's friends, family, or engineers, into a box where they can't hear you. And so what I do like about this new project due diligence is I don't know anybody, which means they don't have any preconceived prejudices against me about who I am or what I am or any of that stuff. There's no familiarity. And so by being outside of the familiarity and having effectively a captive audience, we get an opportunity to speak the truth and let them hear it. And it's very valuable. And that, as it relates to resistance, I think that's just going to be normal because, one, it's a slap in the face of all of the various professional engineering groups that have not looked into it or questioned it at all. So it's kind of insulting to them, and it should be, that they have not, that they just accepted it on face value.
Absolutely. And you think that people whose job it is to dig into matters like this, engineers, would get at the basic arguments and know them of the NIST report, know them of AE-911 truth, and form a judgment from comparing those two contrasting arguments. But a lot of times they'll just be like regular people, just make assumptions based off of what has been told to them. And we got to change that, obviously. Roland, I was told that there's going to be a new phase of PDD, and I'm not even aware of what that is. I don't have any details so far, so you're going to be illuminating me right here on the show along with our audience. Can you talk about the next phase of Project Due Diligence, what you're planning?
Yes, we started out with a list of petition signers that had engineering backgrounds, and we contacted those engineers and asked them if they would be interested in being an active volunteer for Project Due Diligence. And we explained that that would be an outreach to the local engineering branches in their immediate neighborhood, which could be an area of several hundred square miles. And so we recruited, originally, I think about 36. I think now we're up to 43 or 44 engineers spread out across the country. And we tried to get engineers in at least each of the major areas of the country, the Midwest, the Northeast, the South, the Southwest, Pacific Coast, Northwest, so on. And so in phase one, we began by contacting the branches that were closest to where we had a volunteer, so that if we were accepted to make a presentation, the logistics of making that presentation would not be so difficult. In other words, the travel expenses and the preparation that needed to be made to make the presentation would be relatively minor. So that was phase one. Now, we pretty much exhausted the areas around our volunteers. So in phase two, we're reaching out to the areas where the travel arrangements are going to have to be a little more expensive and more time-consuming. For instance, Casey just did a presentation in Georgia, in Atlanta, and he's coming from South Carolina. So that entailed a considerable drive for him. I think he said it was 5 or 6 hours, something like that, each way. So that was considerably more difficult than driving, say, 40 or 50 miles to make a presentation. His next presentation, the next one Casey's going to do, is in Birmingham, Alabama, and he's going to have to fly over there, get a hotel room, make the presentation, and fly back. So our expenses and our time commitment to make these presentations in phase two is going to be greater than it was in phase one. So we have divided it up this way because we wanted to pick the low-hanging fruit first, stuff that was easier to get to. Now we're beginning to reach out to the stuff that is potentially more difficult in terms of logistics. So that's the difference between phase one and phase two.
Well, it sounds like a lot harder work, obviously, but it's definitely something that is necessary, and nobody can ever accuse us of not going wherever we can with this evidence, because you're really working hard to get to those places that, as you just said, logistically were very difficult to get to before. But I know that traveling several states just to give a presentation is very difficult sometimes for volunteers, but it goes to show how dedicated our people are to this issue. I mean, I just remember, and I'm not even a part of PDD, I'm not even an engineer, but when I was in New York as a volunteer, the places that I would travel to be part of some kind of outreach, you know, and that's just one story. There's so many other people that just do this because there's just something in them that knows that they have to be a part of getting this information out there. Nobody else will do it. So I think there's something almost miraculous about that, just how hard people are willing to work, sometimes even on their own dime, just to do the work that the government should have done in the first place. Now, Roland, since the last time you were on, the Building 7 study came out, and I haven't had an opportunity yet to get your commentary on the release of that. So can you briefly give our audience your take on the Halsey study?
Professor Halsey is a very courageous individual. I mean, he's stepped forward into an arena which is definitely not friendly to this information, because academic institutions have not taken the lead in investigating what, by all rights, should be one of the primary areas of investigation in terms of structural engineering. Yet we haven't been able to find a single institution, academic institution in the United States, that's taken this study up. So for him to step forward and say he was willing to conduct this project was a very courageous act. And the great thing about it is that he had the complete support of the administration of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. They stood behind him and helped him carry this out. So that's the first thing, is that we found a rare individual who was willing to take a courageous step and investigate a subject matter that was definitely on the so-called do not touch list. So for a number of years now, I think 3 or 4 years, he studied this with his graduate students, and he's produced a report which, in my opinion, is a very concise and complete explanation for what did not happen when the building collapsed, Building 7. It could not have been brought down by fires, which he examined thoroughly, taking this information, taking all the information that we had been able to gather, and putting it into finite element analysis models, both static and dynamic, and his conclusions were that the building wasn't brought down by fires, and furthermore, the only way that you could get the building to act the way it is recorded in the videos of its collapse is to remove all the core columns, the 24 core columns, and the 58 perimeter columns shortly thereafter, within a second or 1.2 or 1.3 seconds afterwards, and then you can get the building over 8 floors, by the way, somewhere below the 16th floor, And that's the only way you can get the building to behave in the observed manner. So he doesn't go so far as to say that that must have been the controlled demolition, but the obvious question is, how could you take out 24 core columns and 58 perimeter columns within a second or so of each other simultaneously over eight floors? That is not a progressive collapse. This conclusion was that a failure of a girder at a column connection led to the collapse of various floors, which then led to the buckling of a column, which then led to the buckling of the core columns, which then led to the buckling of the perimeter columns in a progressive fashion. And Professor Halsey's conclusion is it was a global collapse, not a progressive collapse, completely different animal. And I think his conclusions are sound. We've been taking comments on them now, public comments. We're going through the public comments. The public comment period is over November 15th. We've had peer reviews. We're going through their comments. And from everything that I've seen, I am absolutely confident that his report is going to stand up against any peer or other criticism that's leveled at it.
Absolutely. What I like about it, too, is that the input data is out there. It's transparent. I know they had some trouble getting it up on the site, technical issues, but it's up there. So even the people who don't like what we're saying, who are looking for every reason to try to attack this study, they have the opportunity to. We're not hiding anything. Now, we all know that this is in stark contrast to the institution that we're up against, NIST, who have kept their input data under lock and key, claiming it would somehow jeopardize public safety for them to release this data on a building that no longer exists. It doesn't make any sense. We've put out bulletins encouraging our supporters to write to NIST and say, what is the secrecy about? What public safety risk is there? Why don't you release it? And so far, NIST has been just stonewalling, standing by its original statement that they won't release the data. More of the same, but we encourage our supporters to write to them and keep up the pressure. It's only through keeping up public pressure that anything happens in this country, and I've learned that firsthand. But, you know, you got two studies, different conclusions. One keeps their input data under lock and key. The other one has all their input data out there in the open. I mean, this is such a bizarre situation. Since we're doing this push now to have people write to NIST and pressure them to release their data, and we'll start with Casey, just what is your commentary on that situation and the farce that we're facing here now that NIST's official story has been completely debunked by the Halsey study?
Well, I mean, the best way to look at it is it's just an expose into a guilty conscience. So either everything is transparent or it's not. Obviously, there's nothing that needs to be hidden as it relates to analysis. This is not a bank that's actively working where you're trying to keep the location of the safe and how to get inside the safe secret. There's nothing secret about a building. There's nothing secret about a building collapse. And there's nothing secret about structural engineering at all. It's well written about throughout all the various universities. And, you know, construction documents you can find at the building department. You can get a hold of construction documents any day of the week for any building in any city. Of course, as long as they're keeping good records. I mean, some cities don't, but most cities nowadays do keep good records. So if the record is available, you can have it. Nobody can keep you from it. It takes you a little bit of administrative work, but you're allowed to get records of any building in any city, of course, that has those records. So the notion that a group would try to keep records of a building away is ludicrous and silly.
Roland, same question. Just your commentary on this situation that we're facing here, where you have the two conflicting reports and NIST won't even release its data for people on the fence to even compare how these conclusions were reached on each side.
They haven't been able to explain exactly why they believe the release of this information would threaten public safety. They simply make a blanket statement. They infer that what it means is that if the NIST report or certain aspects of it were made public, then somehow that would make that information valuable to more potential terrorists who would use that information to take buildings down. And that is a ludicrous proposition, because in the first place, and they know it's ludicrous because their analysis is faulty. So since they're claiming that this connection fails at a girder on one floor, attaching it to a column, and led to a progression of events that caused the whole building to collapse, It's a ludicrous notion to believe that that information in detail is going to lead other terrorists to be able to take down other high-rise buildings. It's laughable. I don't know how else to say it.
Well, it's ridiculous, because even if you believe NIST's explanation of why Building 7 came down, what secret information are you going to be communicating to terrorists? What, start a fire? And you can bring the building down? I mean, that's not that hard to figure out. People have been starting fires since the beginning of time. So what specifically is a threat to public safety here that anyone doesn't already know? And again, you're talking about a specific building that is no longer in existence here. I think the need for a real scientific inquiry into how they came to those conclusions is more important than any fabricated public safety risk that they can come up with. Well, I know you guys are doing a great job with your outreach in the various areas, Roland, with your leadership and project due diligence, and I want to thank you for what you are doing and encourage you to please keep it up and keep on coming back on the show to give our supporters updates on it. We are out of time. Thank you for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
Thanks for having us, Andy.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Andy, and good work.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. So you have a great week. Good luck.